thatgreatbusinessshow.com is brought to you by DeFacto Shaving Oil, the best anyone can get. Made in Ireland, sold worldwide.
Welcome to That Great Business Show, episode 25, posting on the 12th of March, 2021. I am Conal O'Moran. We're now a quarter of a century in on Ireland's best business podcast and adding many, many hundreds of new listeners every week. In fact, we're growing so fast that we've added a marketing intern to the team this week. So a big shout out to Alana Henry in Gaeliv, the newest member of Team GBS. And coming up on E25, as we call it, we have marketing on no budget, how a newly world-patented gum shield maker attracted the eyes of the world for €0. We like that. And that's the kind of thing we do at Team GBS. We give you the best business hacks. Also, what happens when your world-famous brand, business, franchise goes wallop? Well, true entrepreneurs pick themselves up, dust themselves off, and start all over again. We have such a story. And as we're 25 today, we've decided to go to the races. Or at least we're checking out a software aimed at making sure bloodstock is in tip-top condition to go to the racing. And we'll chat to a very early-stage AI company that has found large telegraph poles in the Irish Sea. Yes, really. That's what we do on That Great Business Show. We bring you the best, most interesting, sometimes the most unusual, most compelling business stories every week. Also, a huge shout out to Tara Beattie of PrepSheet, who joined us last week on episode 24. I introduced Tara to the Ireland Connecticut Business Council weekly Zoom meeting, and the reaction from the US to her catering software is simply stupendous. A fabulous pitch by a fabulous Team GBS member. If your business has an eye to the US market, why not join us on our 30-minute Zoom chat every Wednesday at 3 p.m. Send producer at thatgreatbusinessshow.com an email and we'll send you a Zoom link. First up today, I am sharing the pain with my guest because I have seen his company promotional videos on YouTube and boy, they hurt. But they're also very, very, very funny. So much so that 1 million people plus have watched rugby international Ian Madigan on his video for the company. James Murphy is co-founder of Impact Gum Shields, a company that makes, wait for it, gum shields. But these are different. They're not your stick them in the boiling water and bite down hard type. No, these are the Rolls Royce of gum shields, 3D, printed, custom fitted, using dental imaging technology. They're so good that Impact has just, after a mere 3.5 years, received a patent. And they're now looking to any and every contact sport in the world to check out Impact Gum Shields. James Murphy, you are welcome to That Great Business Show.
Thank you very much. Delighted to be here.
You know what I'm going to ask you first, because we already discussed this yesterday, the day before. Yeah. You said, oh, I suppose you're going to ask me about the videos. Yes, I'm going to ask you about the videos. Anybody who has not seen these videos, you get damaged.
Yes, that's a very good way of explaining what happens.
In an unusual way.
In an unusual way, I don't
Do
know.
Do your teeth get touched?
My teeth don't get touched this time around, but maybe in some follow-up videos they might get touched. But yes, it was a bit of inspiration from, of all places, The Simpsons, actually. So I think when you see the video, you might understand why.
Go on, tell us. Well, basically, what Ian Madigan does is he throws a ball very, very hard into another ball or two.
Yeah, exactly that.
Ouch. Everybody, one man, woman, or child I've shown them to, just go, oh, God. Did it? Now, no trickery with the cameras, was there?
No. It was.
You're sad.
It was a first time, one time only effort. And
Do you know what a telephone book is? Is that you're too young to remember?
No, I know telephone books.
Did you stick a telephone book down there?
No, nothing. So before, when we first launched the business 6 years ago, we needed a way of creating a bit of talk around us, and obviously didn't have any money at the time. So we decided, well, what's better than watching someone else get hurt? And I was the unlucky, or the person stupid enough to say, I will volunteer to be the person who gets hurt. And Ian Madigan, who is now actually an investor in the business, at the time we asked him to basically throw the ball at my face to test out our custom fit gum shields. And little beknownst to me, that him and my former co-founder, Gary Brown, had a little conversation, thought it'd be funnier if we recreated the scene from The Simpsons where old man gets hit in the balls with a American football.
Very hard.
So that was actually what ended up happening. And the pain that you see in my face and the reactions is 100% real.
There's a few bleeps in there as well. Because
there's a lot of bleeps.
Which is quite understandable.
Yeah.
Now, you know what you did there? You very kindly mentioned when you founded the company 6 years ago.
Mm.
Like, it's a long time coming, isn't it? You've only just this week got your patent.
Yes. Yeah. It's like all these business here. That's 7 year overnight success. So when the company was founded, probably actually almost 7 years ago now, considering 2021. But I kind of consider the first 4 years a learning curve and learning how to run a business. And
what had you been doing?
I come from a sports marketing advertising background. So I actually lived in London for a period of 8 years and worked in an advertising agency and looked after the likes of Adidas was my main client and looked after their football and rugby and Olympic kind of promotional launches for new products.
Were you making the ads or just client liaison?
No. So I was basically what they would call an account director, a kind of project manager and the creatives did kind of brought the stuff to life. But I was very lucky. We used to look after the jersey launches for the kind of their top clubs like Chase, Chelsea, AC Milan, Liverpool when they were with Adidas. So I used to get to travel around Europe and do these photo shoots with all these famous soccer stars and what you call and whatnot. So that was very cool. And the Olympics one in 2012 was when we did as well. But then
that's
I came back.
Not bad, yeah.
Yeah, it was cool.
Then
it
you came back. Why?
It came back to Ireland because it was I missed home.
That happens.
Yeah, home is where the heart is. Even though I lived with a lot of my best mates in London, we were all kind of starting to progress to come back home and missed my parents and missed the lifestyle in Ireland and the comfort of it all, I suppose. Got to be away at that stage, away 8 years. So came back and worked for a small period of time within marketing here and doing stuff around Guinness and Vodafone and whatnot. And I kind of got to a point where I kind of said, I'm getting to a certain position in my life. And I thought when I reach X position with Y amount of money, that I'd be happy and life would be sorted. And actually what I realized is the further I got up the food chain, the more unhappy I became because the less I was doing of the stuff that I loved doing, which was creating content with great creatives and interacting with clients and be more kind of...
I'm going to call this the business therapy show from now on. Because almost every week, not one, maybe two or three people of the four that we would normally interview, they come out with some story just like that. I'm just thinking immediately, I don't know whether you heard Karen O'Neill of Beacon. She was huge in marketing with, I think, Heineken in Netherlands.
Oh, right, okay.
And she was top of the top of the heap.
Mm.
And she gave it all up for rock and roll to make her Beacon or Beacon drink. So listen out for that one. That's a really telling story
as well. I definitely will. Yeah.
So anyways, you come home, you're back home and you want to go get into serious poverty.
Yeah, that's a brilliant way. Yes, I wanted to really just get rid of all the money I'd saved up over a period of time. So at the time, I set up the business with two of my good mates, a guy called Gary Brown, who's a former professional rugby player with Leinster, and another good mate of mine from college called Barry Plunkett. And we'd seen the idea of there's a company in the UK, I won't mention them because they're a competitor, you never give them free shout outs. But we saw how they did their business where they went into schools and clubs with a dentist, took hundreds of impressions using traditional dental putty materials, brought it back to a dental lab and made the custom fit gum shields and sent them back out. And when I was in London, I still played rugby and I got one from them. And I thought, well, that's a great idea. Why don't we do that in Ireland? So we decided to put our savings at the time and basically mimic what they were doing from a business model perspective.
Mimic? Did the lawyers look at this one? There's another word the lawyers use for that.
Yeah. Well, you know, if you can't beat them, join them, almost type situation. But what I realized is when we set up the business and we started getting great traction with schools and clubs in Ireland is that the traditional ways of making these gum shields hadn't changed in almost 60 years. So the methods of manufacturing using the plastic materials, a lot of labor involved, a lot of manual labor, a lot of kind of using your eye to guess the product's right or not, and likewise the putty molds, etc. I just thought that was a bit of madness.
Add in the piece about the did you say the Weetabix or something in the mold and
we
go down and dirty in this
One of the driving forces behind looking at alternative ways of making our custom fit gum shields was when we were down in a local rugby club after all the minis had just finished playing rugby. And I was down there with our dentist at the time, and we're taking the putty impressions. And they can give some people a bit of a gagging effect, especially younger children. And one of the kids, just before we kind of took his molds, decided to eat like 14 digestives, you know, really dry, like put a lot of material in your mouth, and then he washed it down with a load of Orangina, whatever it may be, and we was kind of like, we waited until he was the last kid, and it's like, right, listen, we'll do you now, even though, and you know, it was just kids, just hyper, whatever, and the dentist is getting the putty in the mold and getting it together, and popped in his mouth, and went to put in his mouth, and I could kind of see the kid starting to like do these convulsions on the chair, and I was like, "Oh God, I think we've got a bleeder here." And what ended up happening is he basically spewed all his digestives and Orangina all over the dentist and part of me, and that was kind of a couple of expletives came out then. And I was like, "Jesus, there must be a better way."
Because we better make clear, this was the old one, this the UK one. The exactly. Not good one.
Exactly. So that this was the old method of making gum shields or mouth guards. And after that point in time, that was probably about 3 years into the business. I said
it's a long time.
Yeah. But this is the thing.
And you were making a living at that stage, out of that, were you?
No, God, no. I was still doing the odd job of freelancing on the side in the marketing world, and I had a bit of money still saved up, but you kind of lived on your a lot of beans and toast, to be honest. I'm not going out too much, but what I kind of realized is that we're never going to scale if we just follow someone else's path, and that we need to look at it from an alternative way. It's like, well, if you have no money, you know, you got to think on your feet and kind of look a different way. So this is when I kind of started looking into 3D printing. And this is probably where ignorance is bliss, because I didn't come from a dental background. And because gum shields always made this way, when I kind of inquired why they made this way, there's like, because they always have been. I was like,
that's always a good place to start, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And it's like, well, surely it's time for change. You know, as I said, I hadn't changed in 60 years. So when I kind of looked into it, I'd be into my technology. And at the time, there was quite some famous incidents where an individual in America started 3D printing a gun that they could fire. So he was using FDM printers, printing off the shell of a gun, and he actually fired live bullets. And then there was an Italian company who started printing human cells. And I thought to myself, well, if you can 3D print
human
cells, yeah.
Like me and you.
Like, yeah, you, me and you. So they...
I hadn't heard that one before. I've heard about the guns already.
There's quite a few companies now in the biotech space that are looking to print human organs. Now, that's probably still 10, 15 years off in terms of actually being able to insert them into humans, but it's gone to a stage where, you know, there's people 3D printing houses, human organs, all types of devices. But when I saw that at the time, that was 4 or 5 years ago, I thought to myself, well, if you can 3D print a gun, you can 3D print a gum shield. And when I looked into it...
It's almost spelled the same as well.
Yeah, exactly. A gun shield. Yeah, a gun shield. And when I looked into it, you couldn't. So again, in pure ignorance, just stupidity, is like, well, the plastic doesn't exist and software doesn't exist. So if it doesn't exist, I'll invent it. And like, you know, you can't beat stupidity sometimes, because I just started asking these questions. I went to people, experts in the field, and I said, you know, is this material around? No. Can it be developed? It's like, yeah, it can, but it's going to take time. And that's when I started reaching out to Enterprise Ireland and you know, initially got the CSF funding, and then I found some brilliant people I worked with to help develop initially the 3D printing material. So once we knew we had a 3D printing material that was suitable, that you could put in your mouth, that would have the right layer adhesion, right impact absorption, right kind of comfort, we then said, right, well, we can 3D print the gum shields. But then we realized the software didn't exist. Because again, in my naivety is thinking, well, you know, the dental space is a very advanced, you know, area, and that they'd have the software that would do this. And there was kind of bits and bobs of software, but again, they needed a lot of manual input from a software perspective in terms of human interacting with the software. And I said, I want to take the human out. I want to be able to kind of, as much as possible, have a piece of software do the heavy lifting for us. So what we end up inventing is a piece of software where we now go into schools and clubs. We're in Ireland, the UK, Holland, Belgium, launching in New Zealand next month. And what we do is we have an intraoral scanner. It's like a big electric toothbrush, I kind of say to people, that takes digital images of your mouth. So we go into a school, we can scan 100, 200 kids at a time, create 3D images of the mouth. We take that 3D image and we process it through our patented software.
Is that the patent? It's on the software?
Yes, it's on the software itself.
Okay.
So originally we looked at patenting the material as well, but the materials is like a recipe for a cake. So you can make the standard sugared version of the cake, but someone could come along and kind of go, I'm going to make the gluten-free version or the sugar-free version. And they circumnavigated your patent, and also now they know what's in the ingredients of your cake. So we, after spending a couple of grand, we kind of realized, actually, we don't want to patent that. We want to keep that a company secret or trade secret. So we did that. But the software, we kind of realized, well, there is some very novel inventive steps in here that we definitely want to protect. And what we actually end up doing is developing a software tool chain that allows us to produce a 3D printable mouthpiece or 3D printed mouthpiece. So it's not just a gum shield or patent covers. It's a night guard for people who grind their teeth, a retainer for people who've had orthodontic work and want to keep their teeth in the same position, whitening trays. So actually, our patent is quite broad in the sense that we can now take a 3D scan of someone's mouth, process it through our software, and it'll spit out a 3D printable file.
Spit,
thank you, yes. and we can send it directly to the printer itself. So traditional, a lot of companies out there will say, we 3D print our products. Like even the biggest company in the world, dental companies in the world, say we 3D print our product. They don't. What they actually do is 3D print a model of your teeth. So they'll actually say, oh, we 3D print the products. But what they'll do is take that scan that we've gotten and they'll 3D print the model of your teeth and then use traditional manufacturing techniques to make the product the end product. What we do is actually saying we get that 3D model, process through the software, spits out the print-ready file, and go directly to print. So we cut out, in let's say in a 10-step process, we cut out 4 or 5 steps of that manufacturing process.
3.5 years to get your patent.
Yeah.
Mad, isn't it?
It's mad. But it's one of those things, COVID as well happened. So that's sticky year in it. Sticky and everything. This is like triple the time, triple the cost. It's kind of one thing I've learned is that everything takes longer and more expensive than you think it will. But it's just the willingness to keep going, I suppose.
But you are not selling at the moment because you can't.
Yeah, no, we can't.
Is the only way that you can do it is by physically going to, say, a school or a club or whatever and doing that scanning?
Yeah, so yes and no. So currently right now is that we go directly to schools and clubs, but what our software has allowed us to do and having a patent in place is that now actually these dental intraoral scanners, as we call them, are becoming more ubiquitous across dentists and dental networks throughout Ireland, UK, Europe, the world. So we've actually started, we're just in the process of launching new products like night guards for people to grind their teeth. But what we're doing there, instead of us going directly out to the consumer, we're working directly with the businesses. So a dentist or a dental chain or a dental network who have a scanner in their practice. So what's now happening, we've just started doing with 5 practices currently, where they have their scanner in their office. They actually have people come in saying, I need to get a gum shield, or I need to get a night guard, or I need to get a retainer. They take the scan and send us the file. So in essence, we've gone from being not only a manufacturer, but now a digital lab, so we can receive files.
And where are you printing?
Just down the road in Goatstown. So we have a 1,000-foot square place.
And if you mentioned New Zealand, if you're scanning in New Zealand, where will the New Zealand gum shields?
So they're actually produced down in New Zealand. So
that's a long way to go with the gum shield.
Yeah. We try with initial testing. We try sending by post. Fortunately, post is the most reliable thing going 12,000 miles. So when we thought it would take 5 to 7 days, as per the back of the label, it would take 2 to 3 weeks. So we realized that wasn't a viable solution. So our distributor, our licensee down there, is actually producing down there. So we produce all the files centrally. So we upload all our files to the server. Our team can then work in the files. We then built our own software platform saying, your files are ready. They download the files and print them. So for New Zealand, they print there. For the UK, we have a team there who are out doing the scanning, and they just upload the files onto the cloud. We download them, process them, and print them here, and then post them.
And where is the patent protecting you?
Yeah, initially Europe. So we also have applied for a patent in, I have to remember this now, US, Canada, China, Japan, India, South Africa, Hong Kong, New Zealand, Australia.
So that's about 8 zeros to the application form, as in the cost. Cost is huge, isn't it?
Yeah, cost. The cost.
Roughly
is,
speaking, what are we in the finger in the air type of money?
Yeah, well, an issue to get your first patent over the line. I have an excellent patent agent, by the way, so if anyone does, do reach out to me, because he's a brilliant guy.
Give him a shout out.
Yeah, his name is Jonathan White. He's a patent agent. He's specialised in software, and he's brilliant. Honestly, he's really held our hand through this process. Initially, for the European patents, it's probably going to be in the region of 20 grand all in. And then once you have your patent application granted in other territories, there's initial fees there as well. So probably 2 to 3 grand additional per country. So depending on how many countries you go for, you're talking a minimum of 20 grand to get over the line. And then you're probably talking more in the region of 40 to 50. And then you have a yearly cost to keep your patent in place in these countries.
So that means that you need a big market. And yes, that's what we're here to do, Team GBS. Yes. We want to line out for you, get that? And we want to stick your gum shields into our gobs. What can we do for you?
Yeah, well, I suppose it's been a very exciting time. Obviously, with COVID, it's been very tough. You're not been selling. But we've managed to raise a decent sum of money, our first outside investments, I suppose, just at the end of last year. And what that's allowed us to do is to, first of all, build the team a little bit more, put a bit more structure on the business itself, and push out to these new markets and territories. And what we're working a lot on is obviously the operation side for gum shields and having the right people in the right places for these new territories, but also working on the dental side and producing these new dental products. So what we're really trying to push on with from our perspective is moving to the dental side of the market and working directly with dentists and the dental networks, but also just getting the name of Impact Gum Shields out there and letting people know that there's an alternative way to get a custom fit gum shield that not only offers better protection, it's a better fit, more comfortable, it's smaller in the mouth, it's lighter in the mouth, but that we're a wholly Irish company, the plastics even produced here in Ireland up in Donegal, and that we're an ambitious young company. I think we're young. I know it's 7 years old, but...
we're not just talking about rugby here, all contact sports.
Oh, yes. Yeah, no, it's not just rugby. So that's the most important thing, really. It's, we have obviously hockey, GAA, MMA, and then like the likes of boxing. And, it's a case of, for instance, in the world of rugby, we're official suppliers to Leinster Rugby, RPI, which is Rugby Players Ireland. So we look after the women's and the men's teams. And likewise in hockey, we kind of look after some well-known names. But for us, it's about, the everyday person, like you and me are everyday sports people, let's say.
Looking at the wrong guy here.
I'm sure at some point. but it's making people aware that we have this product to sell. And
what is the addressable market size roughly?
Globally?
Yeah.
Contact sports, 146 million people. Just contact sports.
And you're... Gum shields cost something like 70 or 80 euros.
Yes, depending on which one you get, we have a variance of the product between 60 and 80 euros. So
80 is for the Rolls Royce one.
Exactly. 80 is for the Rolls Royce, the elite one that's worn by all the professional.
That's the one I'll be getting.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
Come here to me, hire in a heartbeat. I did ask you to think of somebody that you would hire in a heartbeat.
Yes.
Who's that?
That was actually, John, I took a good time thinking about this because I know that obviously...
That's very kind of you.
Yeah, no.
I only asked you a few months ago.
I know, yeah. Well, there's people like, people say, like, obviously Steve Jobs and Elon Musk and Phil Knight, founder of Nike, are all very inspirational. But the great thing, the thing about a Tesla or an Apple or all these products is that they have an amazing brand. And usually behind an amazing brand is an excellent advertising company who created this persona and want behind it. You create this want for his product.
I think you want your old job back.
No, Jesus, no. there's a company called Wieden & Kennedy that was founded back in the late 70s, early 80s, and they were the original advertising company for Nike. So one of the founders of that company is a guy called Dan Wieden, and he came up with the tagline, "Just do it." So he basically... you know, at the time, there's a Puma, there's Adidas, there's Nikes, but there's, in terms of their product, there's very little differentiation. But what really makes one better than the other is the brand and the want behind them. And where that comes from is great advertising campaigns. So Dan Wyden created some of the best Nike advertising campaigns that you've ever seen. So someone like him, where you can make the brand come to life.
And I shouldn't ask this question, but is he still around?
He is.
Oh, good man. Dan, Dan, we love you. He's available.
He's about 76 or 77. He lives in the US.
Well, we're going to contact him through LinkedIn and we'll tell him that there's a job for him.
I'd love that.
With Impact Gum Shields. And that is James Murphy, co-founder of Impact Gum Shields. And thank you very much for joining us on That Great Business Show.
Thank you very much. I really appreciate it.
Conobio, at That Great Business Show.
That Great Business Show is made possible thanks to De Facto Shaving Oil, the world's best shaving oil for men and women. It's the best anyone can get. Put a few drops onto wet skin and when you shave, you'll never have a nick or a razor burn again. Just smooth, soft, great smelling skin. Buy it now on defactoshave.com.
That Great Business Show.
When the history of COVID's impact on business is written, it'll include many, many big brand shops that didn't survive lockdown as the shoppers of the world turned online. Last June, Mothercare Ireland, the family-owned Ireland franchise of the huge UK Mothercare chain that was started in 1998 by David Ward, went into liquidation, shutting 14 stores across Ireland and had been employing almost 200 people. The UK Mothercare chain had been put into administration 6 months before the collapse of the Irish franchise operation. But as I said at my introduction, a true entrepreneur may be down, but never out. That's why the Ward siblings have re-emerged as Kaleidi.com, a new Irish online baby nursery and toy business for baby essentials, nursery items, toys, etc. And just to make things easy for themselves, they're offering a next-day delivery service, as you do. Laura Ward, one of the founding families, in charge of marketing. She was in Mothercare HQ back then when the UK operation, on the day it went into administration. Laura, what was it like in Watford, London that day?
Emotional, kind of strange to be there in that situation. And it was a real reality check. We were ushered into a room to be told what was going on. It was as much a shock to us as the rest of the world. I mean, we saw it on Sky News as a franchisee for the last 20 odd years, you know. So we didn't really see the UK business. We knew that they'd been struggling, you know, as a lot of retailers in the UK have been.
But you're walking around the office in Watford, London.
Yes.
And
nobody's there. They were turned up to work on Monday morning and they were told, turned away at the door.
And you met one of your former colleagues in tears.
Yes. The head of PR over there, I'd worked with Noella for years and years. And unfortunately, she was told that day she was pretty much jobless. A few of them were kept on for a few months.
Orderly wind down, yes, as they call it, or something.
But we
like
were
that,
there, yeah, for a buying meeting to buy clothing.
So you had a no inkling?
No.
Like, what is that shock like? Like, that's like a death, isn't it?
Yes. Well, we were given a lot of confidence and told that they'd separated the UK business from the franchise, the global franchise business. So we were given every confidence that that supply chain would be fine. We were the biggest buyers. We had the most buying power. We outbuyed the global business, outbought the UK business for some time. But as an Irish, you know, our markets are so similar to the UK that we would have very similar buys to what the UK, especially in terms of clothing. So, yeah, we were assured, you know, we need your orders by the end of this week. Like, it was like a normal franchise week where I would go over and spend the week in Watford, view the clothing, get our orders in by the end of the week. So whilst it was shocking, we were given every confidence at that time that we would still be okay.
But it didn't work out that way.
No, really sadly, it didn't.
What
really
happened?
Sadly. So unfortunately, what we were promised, the supply chain was broken.
In other words, not you, not the other franchisees, but somebody back in HQ hadn't really looked after the supply chain.
Well, it was the UK had a lot of outstanding bills.
That's
and
really what I'm trying to say nicely.
Yes, yeah, sorry, I'm a bit more blunt maybe. And a lot of suppliers were burnt, but we would have a lot of our own suppliers in Ireland. A lot of the larger brands in nursery would have Irish reps and we would tend to buy through them. We support Irish wherever possible. We did with Mothercare Ireland. We even more so do now with Kaleidi. So yes, our supply chain in particular, because of that, we bought all our clothing through Mothercare. It was a Mothercare brand and that's what was really suffering for us. So our warehouse was essentially empty in January last year, when normally it would be full of the spring clothing. But every week was, you know, we were assured it's coming, it's coming, it's in such and such a place and it's on its way. And we believed that. And that's what we were telling, you know, our staff, us, we were completely transparent, you know, to everyone. We always, that's how we operate. And sadly, it didn't. And then March came and COVID hit and our stores were, we were one of the first to call it and just said, in the interest of safety, we couldn't possibly have pregnant mums to be walking around and, you know, the social awareness of that. So yeah, we closed the stores. We had a strong, good web platform that had been operating well for a number of years. So we went online and, you know, we trucked along for 3 months. And then as the country reopened, landlords came a knocking and we just couldn't open our doors again, really.
So back to the human side of that. What's that like?
Really sad.
You'd been at this, when I say the Ward family had been at this since, what did I say, 1998?
Two, I think.
1992. Okay, well, that's even longer.
Yes, my father got the franchise back in the early 90s. He was a retailer through and through. He came over to Ireland. He worked through BHS and he became the manager of the BHS store, which is on O'Connell Street, which is now Penny's.
I remember it, unfortunately. As yeah.
So within that British Home Stores, there was a Habitat, a Mothercare and a BHS. And he managed the whole store. And BHS then decided to exit Ireland. And he got the opportunity to get the Mothercare franchise and he went for it. With risks involved, obviously. And we were sat down and told things might be slightly different for a while. And yeah, so Mothercare is all I knew. And I went into college, did a business degree, came out of college, did a little bit of traveling, should have done more. And I came back and just got stuck into the marketing and loved it. And it's all I knew. People that worked for us, I grew up knowing. So it's just really sad and a lot of tears, a lot of sleepless nights, a lot of stress. Not pleasant.
Talk to me about that stress, because I think I know what happens is that there are different views, say, around the family table and different people want to do different things. That cannot be easy.
No, but as a family, amazingly, we work very well together. Probably why we've continued to work together.
or because you don't know other which way.
No, it was our choice, you know, to carry on. We could have gone and got jobs, but we enjoy working alongside each other. I think we work really well together. We all
I like
bring
the way that
different...
you separate, get jobs, and then otherwise you're working.
Yeah, true. So yeah, there was a lot of conversations between my brothers and my father in behind closed doors about how we were going to, how this was all going to unfold, and not easy conversations, but the foremost, we had our staff in our minds and making sure that they were looked after. But once it gets handed over to the liquidator, that's over,
literally, yeah.
Yeah.
Kaleidi.
Yes.
Why Kaleidi?
A bit of good news, please.
Oh, don't worry. We're all very positive because it was kind of trying to get the listeners to understand you've gone through a lot of pain.
Yes.
It's not easy.
No.
Business is not easy sometimes, but there is always that light at the end of the tunnel.
Mm-hmm.
Kaleidi is short for kaleidoscope or shortened from or something like that is what
you
tell
me. Well, that was the inspiration, yes. We want to be a new, diverse, modern brand, something.
Online.
Online only at the
moment.
Will
you ever open a store again?
We aspire to have a slick state-of-the-art one-day store, showroom, we'll call it.
Like an Apple store or something like that, is that it? Or
yes. Yeah. Yeah, that's what we would aspire to have, yes.
But that's down the line. Because first of all, you have to start selling on your website, which
yes,
you're doing.
Which we're doing, yes. Yeah.
What are you doing differently?
So what's setting us apart from the competition at the moment is our next day delivery promise, which people are outstanded by in this country. It's just people can't believe it.
I actually looked at your website and I saw that and I said, she's promising to, I think if I
next order, business day.
If I order before 2 o'clock or something, you'll get it the following day.
Yes.
Say to Donegal?
Yes, anywhere nationwide.
Are you on your bicycles or who are you using for that?
DPD.
A fair play to DPD.
Yeah.
Like, I know
great.
It's a small country, but there's a lot of small little boreens to get up and down.
Yeah. No, it's working. You know, people are really appreciative of that, especially when you've got a baby crying one evening and you need something the next day. You know, if you've run out of teats for your bottles or something's happened, you know, we can get it to you. No problem.
And of course, every passing year is a younger and younger generation. And I presume the inside of a shop is probably alien to some of them.
Well, yes, and I don't know about you, but I have no interest in going near a shop at the moment or for the foreseeable. So I do all my shopping online.
I'm a male. I don't want to shop ever anyway, so I don't really care. So, but back to Kaleidi, is that you say you back Irish, which is great.
Yes.
I do remember that there is a pram manufacturer or a pram distributor. I can never remember. They were on a previous business show with me.
Okay.
But I can't imagine that there can be many Irish manufacturers of children's gear, clothes, goods.
There's a few small Irish clothing lines now. They'd be generally quite small. But we have Irish brands such as Clever Mama. That is a global success. And we introduced them to Mothercare International. And now they're an international brand and they're fantastic. They're two sisters from Swords and they have really smart, clever products. And we love that story and they're great to work with. And they've got a huge product range now. Who else do we have? Like Cogni Kids is another brilliant cognitive development brand, which is wholly Irish. And we're doing a real focus on that next week, actually, on our website and trying to do a search for any smaller Irish brands that we haven't heard of yet. We'd love to have them on our website.
Oh, so there's a shout out to Team GBS. If you know anybody who is doing anything near, around, because
yes,
you're very wide.
Yeah.
You're not just clothes or cribs. You are much, much broader than
the
that.
The nursery industry, yeah. And we aspire to have, you know, the widest range for our customers in terms of feeding products, cots, anything like that. That's what we're aspiring to have. So we're constantly on the hunt for new and innovative products.
I'm doing this deliberately because I know what the reaction I'm going to get is. I'm going to use one word, Amazon.
Oh, Amazon is a dirty word to most Irish retailers or retailers in any country, really. I just see them, they just pick a marketplace and decimate it almost. You know, they have the buying power, they buy stuff up and they sell it dirt cheap, and it's just.
But can you argue with them when the consumer wins? He, she gets the product at dirt cheap price.
Yes, the consumer. Do they win? I don't. Yes, I suppose. But we want to keep, you know, at the end of the day, we want to keep business in Ireland. And I think that this, you know.
The circular economy, as they
call
it.
Yes, exactly. And I know this Christmas was the first, well, not the first Christmas, but definitely a real spin towards everyone really focusing on buying Irish. And, you know.
You saw it.
Oh, absolutely. The support for now that I know we were an Irish brand before with Mothercare Ireland, but with Kaleidi, it's a true Irish brand in terms of it has no previous British heritage, which Mothercare would have had. Kaleidi is wholly brand new, you know, fully Irish. And the support we've received because of that is phenomenal and lovely.
It is a small market on this island. Have you got aspirations to go abroad? Now, I know you're online, but can you compete with the other onlines around the world or even straight across the sea over in the UK?
Yes, or we'd love to. Yeah, hence the .com versus .ie.
But can you? You know, you're talking about value, price, and is it a case that you're just reselling what people can find elsewhere?
Yes, but I suppose if we can try and bring the widest selection to people, which is what we aspire to do, and make sure that we have, you know, for example, the feeding, you know, there's a huge range of different feeding brands in this country or globally. And if we try to make sure that we have all of those brands with a good range within that, we're offering the widest choice. And because we're online, we have that diversity.
I have to ask this question because I'm a dad who went through, now it's a long time ago, feeding, and the promises made by all those feeding bottles, each one of them might prove to be untrue. Has child feeding ever improved, or do they still get the hiccups and the colic and the...
You'll always have colic, I think, but there are anti-colic bottles now.
Yeah, they had them back then too, and they were rubbish.
Oh, well, I don't know. Well, I have no first-hand experience of a colicky baby, so I don't know myself, but... people use them and swear by them. So I would like to say, yes, they do work.
So what could Team GBS, our lovely listeners, do for Kaleidi?
Shop with us, give us a chance.
How long do you open?
We opened at the very end of September last year. Yeah.
So when you are successful, you'll be able to look back and say, my God, we opened in the middle of the worst time of the... That was the second wave, wasn't it? Was it the third wave? I mean, I know everybody's
forgotten. I don't know how many waves we've had now. We did, but, you know, the other thing that we have under our belt is the Early Learning Centre toys. We had that brand with Mothercare and we had great relationship with them, maintained it as we did with, you know, nearly all of our suppliers. So they were very positive.
At least they worked when I was... had a dad of little people.
Yes, yeah. And the toys have been a brilliant success, especially during lockdowns. Everyone's looking for something. And we have a fantastic art and creativity, early developmental range there with Early Learning Centre. So we've had great success there.
There will be an end to COVID. We will actually get out
of
this. But that means that you then will face that challenge of maybe people going back into shops because you won't.
Yeah.
I don't care. But others will go back into shops. And therefore, how are you going to keep... You are head of marketing. It's
yes.
A bloody big marketing challenge.
It is, yes. And what I've been trying to do is really build an online community in terms of, you know, the content that we've been working on. You know, I have a panel of experts that I've been drawing on and we do Instagram lives. And, you know, I'm really trying to give that level of advice piece back to our customers and create a community and... be worthwhile for someone to tune in and to be a customer of ours.
What kind of advice on what? I presume on babies, but...
Yes, so I had a sleep expert on, not last Wednesday, the Wednesday before. She was fantastic. We've had...
Calpol. I'm not allowed to say that, am I?
And then we've also had a paediatric nurse, Linda Quigley. She's fantastic. She's done a number of lives for us, just covering off basic first aid, like what a rash looks like, what a, you know, things like that. So we've had some really good content there. So
now this is episode 25 going out in middle of March of 2021. When you come back in the middle of March 2022, what will you be doing?
The same, but better, I hope. You know, wider range, still the next day delivery promise.
Amazon, you know, Amazon Prime, I know you hate that word. If you're in a big urban centre, they can do it in 2 hours or something now. Did you know that?
God, you're stop plugging Amazon here.
I'm not. I am so for you and I'm so for Irish businesses.
Yes.
Amazon is the big beast and they
it
do
is.
Destroy businesses. Mm. So I suppose I'm going to get in jail for that or something.
Well, I don't
take
know.
It all back. I'm very sorry, Mr. Bezos. You're a wonderful human being. You're very rich.
With all your money, yes. Yeah.
So my question stands.
Okay.
Do you think that you could you really, realistically crack the UK market?
Yes, I would absolutely be confident that we can.
I'd love you to do it.
I would
be happy to see that.
I mean, there's a gap
in
the market.
Back the other way, yeah.
You know, they don't have Mothercare anymore. Okay, they're with Boots, sort of. So they
That's
do.
That never works, does it?
I don't know. You know, we've seen what they've done. They've put the inserts into Boots. Do they look good? Not really, in my opinion.
Yeah, I love this stuff. This is really positive stuff.
Well, I'm honest anyway. Yeah, I don't know. Best of luck to them. But, you know, there's a huge gap in the UK market that we could fill. So why not be a
Team GBS, because we do have, obviously, listeners in the UK. Mm-hmm. They can tell the world over there about it and
please
all the little mummies.
Yeah.
And obviously, we have so many immigrants of our own who are over there. Yeah, my nieces are over there, my nephews. Hire in a heartbeat. Who would you hire in a heartbeat?
Okay, so
you looked at me there as if you had no idea what I was going to say.
I didn't, because you were like, heartbeat. I was like,
and I said, oh my God, she didn't read the email.
I didn't prepare. No, I did. With my marketing hat on and my Instagram head that I am, I would go with Christy Teigen, who is a global success in terms of being a real mum. If we had her as a brand ambassador, it would be amazing.
And where does Ms. Teigen live, or where is she?
Oh, America, stateside. But she's just really natural, real. She shows it how it is being a mum. She suffered very sad miscarriage at the end of last year, I think. And, you know, she showed it all and she bared all, and it was admirable and amazing.
Any Irish connections with her? She's not really O'Teagan or McTeagan?
No, sadly, no, I don't think so. But she did do a bit of work with a brand that we stock, and I mean, they became a global success overnight. So
very nice.
I'd be all about that.
Well, on our LinkedIn, as we always do, we will tag her if I can find her.
Oh, good luck.
LinkedIn is so bad on tagging, but we do try. And we've, I mentioned earlier on, we've just taken on a new marketing intern. So she's going to prove incredible.
Yes.
And we will be on Instagram and all of these.
Fantastic. Instagram's where it's at. You'll be on TikTok next.
Yeah. We will, because we're determined, just like you, to be huge.
Could see you doing some of those dances.
myself and the Dundrum Gardaí or something. Yeah, okay. There might be dancing. Oh, no, I won't go there. Okay, listen, that is Laura Ward of Kaleidi.com. Laura, thank you so much
for joining us
on ThatGreatBusinessShow.com.
You're listening to That Great Business Show. ThatGreatBusinessShow.com.
Did you know that shaving foams can't usually be recycled? They're pressurized, so they're deemed hazardous waste, and they're sent to landfill. One small change can avoid having those millions of cans destroying the environment. Switch to De Facto Shaving Oil, the all-natural shaving oil for men and women. One teeny little bottle can last up to a year. DeFactoShave.com.
Canobio. Or That Great Business Show.
Just because you didn't think of it as a business idea doesn't make it a bad idea. For example, did you think of putting a racehorse's medical and other records online? No, you didn't. But there is a business in that, and it's called Equine MediRecord, based at Tangent Trinity College's Dublin's Ideas Workspace. Michael Grasic, he's the chief executive of the Irish Horse Racing Trainers Association, said this about Equine MediRecord. With more regulations from the Irish Horse Racing Regulatory Board regarding medical record books, it's imperative that we keep records up to date. And using Equine MediRecord solves these problems. And there's a worldwide business in that, says I. Pierce Dargan, you are the co-founder of Equine MediRecord. Welcome to That Great Business Show.
Thank you very much for having me.
You have a huge love of all things four-legged, and particularly if they've got horses' tails on them. Where did this idea come from?
Really, it came from personal need more than anything. So my family's been involved in horse racing for at least five generations. We can trace it back. And we own a thoroughbred racing operation on the Curragh called Airfield House Stud. And at the time I was doing my master's in Trinity, I came back as one of the secretaries at the family farm. I'd got sick. And I said, well, I'll take a stab of trying to keep up with all these paperwork and regulations, and I thought I'd be able to do it. And it was very complex and really complicated and difficult. And I said, geez, if this is hard for us and we only have half a dozen horses, imagine the professional yards that have hundreds.
Now, I know sweet and nothing about the GGs, really. And so tell me about how difficult it is. What records do you actually have to keep? How are they updated? What's the, you know, who's looking at them?
Yeah, so any medication, and the regulation says anything that isn't regular feed or water that is given to a racehorse has to be recorded. And trainers and owners who don't can be fined or even lose their license. So it's imperative that anything that goes into a racehorse is recorded. So it's a lot of paperwork and takes a lot of time.
Are they walking around literally with the clipboard or the Excel sheet? Or
So I've seen for the actual documents, it's a paper book. So it's called a medicines register. That's the regulatory document. But of course, you can't be taking the book out. It is a farm. So it'll get dirt, it'll get water on it. The dog will come over and try and eat it. So most of the time it will be notebooks. So a trainer and their assistants will have little notebooks. They'll put it into an Excel and then that can be handwritten into these actual record books.
I'm going to guess that it's a little bit more complicated than that for a reason, because I presume that I could set up an Excel sheet and just enter stuff off my my tablet. You're kind of laughing at me. Go on, laugh some more. in my face.
So, of course, I was trying to keep it simple, but if you want to go into the complexities, that's perfectly fine.
I do.
So there's certain medications that are allowed to go into horses, obviously, and that ones can't. So there's a whole drug list that's allowed to be used, medications that are allowed to be used for horses, for their welfare, for their well-being. Obviously, there's ones that aren't allowed. So our system automates exactly, and you have a list of medications that are allowed to be used in horses, so you can search them up on the system and know exactly, yes, I can use this medication, and it can go into the horse.
But does your vet not know that, or are you administering this yourselves?
Well,
or,
a lot of the
again,
time...
Again, as I say, I'm particularly ignorant of all this stuff. No.
So a lot of the time, the vet would come down, of course, and administer medications, but then, of course, there are things that the trainer himself can go and buy stores as well that you can buy over the counter and administer to the horses as well. So, and things like equine supplements are very topical. So it's obviously, it's like any other sport. If you played high level sport, you know, supplements, protein levels, things like that are important. And so those can all be bought over the counter. Some are allowed, some are not. And we're seeing it in other sports where there are doping issues that are coming around, supplements that just shouldn't be given to the athletes in the sport. And
are you updating
horses.
It all the time if there are different rulings on such and such a supplement?
Exactly. So what we do is if we are approached by one of our customers and they say, oh, I've just heard about this supplement or this medication that's being given, do you know if it's allowed to be used? We can take that to the regulators and go, look, we've had this approach. And, you know, we just say, look, we don't say any names or anything. We just keep it private, obviously GDPR. We say, we just had this approach for this medication, this supplement. Can we put it into our database? They go off, they do their research, they come back and they either say yes or no. And then we are able to notify that trainer saying, yes, you can or no, you can't.
Right. So what is the actual business model? Is it a software as a service, or are you selling a license, or you're hardly selling it per seat because this is about horses?
Exactly, yeah. So it's a SaaS model. So we charge per horse that is on our platform because we wanted it to be affordable to everybody, whether you have one horse or some of our customers who have over 300 horses. And that makes sense because obviously the person who's using the system who has 300 horses is putting in a lot more information than the one who's putting in one. So it wouldn't be fair.
But hang on a second now. When you say a lot more information, I'm still trying to get my head around this. Mm. It's the same amount of information times 300.
Exactly. Exactly. So it just means that we're going to have to coordinate with that client a lot more. There's going to be a lot more users on the system because obviously if you have 300 horses, you have multiple users on the system so you can invite people. So if I'm the trainer who's responsible for this information, I'm able to invite an assistant or invite a vet or invite my secretary. And whenever they put in information, it pings me as the license holder to say, this medication was given to this horse. Do you approve that? And I go, yes, I do. That is a digital signature and is recorded. And so I always know exactly what is going into my horses, no matter where I am.
This is, there's no hiding place.
Oh, exactly. Well, it just means that the trainer who could be traveling around, because if you have 300 horses, you cannot be with the horses all the time. So whether he's at the racetrack, whether he's gone into a different country, he is still getting those pings going, ping, your horse back on the yard, got this medication. Is that right? And he can, if he isn't sure, he can call up the assistant and go, is that right? Is that what he's got? Oh, yes, it has. Grand. Perfect.
And it's not just about medicine.
No, it's not only about medicine. We do. So there's more regulations, especially something that's topical at the moment, herd immunity. So we were discussing herd immunity back in 2019 in the equine industry because we had an equine flu outbreak. I don't know if you remember, where it shut down racing.
Oh, I do. Yes, I do, yeah.
And that cost the UK hundreds of millions of pounds while it was shut down just for, you know, a week. So what our system also has is a record of vaccinations. So equine flu and equine herpes, once again, very topical. There's been an outbreak in Spain that has shut down the whole equestrian industry on the continent right now, and it's quite worrying. And there's a similar outbreak in the United States. So that also tracks that information so we can know the exact vaccinations that have been given to horses. In the case of outbreaks, we can send alerts to say, you should vaccinate this horse or, you know, this, the regulations have changed. You need to vaccinate this horse now. And so it's about the welfare of the animal. We are able to track it and send updates to ensure the best care is being given to the horses.
Tell me that you have no competitor in the world.
We have, look, there's other equine software providers, but they're not focused on horse welfare. Our sole focus is horse welfare. So there are companies who do yard management. So they'll do like owner invoicing reports. They'll do invoices off to owners. They'll have sections where we'll say veterinary, but they'll just be pure text fields. Like you said, with your Excel, it doesn't ensure that you're recording all the information to keep you compliant. It doesn't ensure that the medications you're using are compliant. It doesn't ensure that when you put in a vaccination, you get automatic reminders on when the next one is due based on the regulation of that country, like what we have. And so we've actually partnered with a number of those companies, and they've been some of the best leads we've got, where their clients come to them going, God, we need a solution to help us with all these regulatory changes. And they'll go, oh, that's our partner over here, Equine MediRecord. Go to them.
Oh, that's neat, because I was going to ask you that question. Would they not just nick you or buy you? Or
Well, they're partnering with us. So they partnered with us and they've said, you know, this is something that you guys focus on. You're the experts in it. We've given talks about equine welfare and our technology to the likes of the World Trotting Conference, which is the conference for harness racing around the world, which is a massive sport. Not very big in Ireland at the moment, but it's the main form of horse racing in Europe. Most people don't know that.
Didn't know that.
Yeah, so there are 30,000 horses.
What I learned on that great business show.
Yeah, there's 30,000 horses in training in Sweden.
Get away. For trotting.
And 29,000 of them are trotting horses. So it's a big sport. So we spoke.
This is left of field. I have no idea why I'm even asking you this.
Same in the United States.
No, sorry, I've got to ask you a question about Swedish trotting. How much would a horse like that be worth?
Millions. The French trotters go for more than the French thoroughbreds.
Really?
It's a huge sport.
I'm back to school today. Oh, I love that.
I didn't know either. Like, you learn, and it's something that starting this. And so we spoke at the World Trotting Conference. We've spoke at the European and Mediterranean Horse Racing Federation Conference.
They wear bikinis and go swimming.
Well, we were supposed to be in Poland in May, but it's now been pushed back. The next conference, we're speaking again. I think it's October, hopefully.
And what do the Poles do with horses?
Oh, big horse racing in Poland.
Okay.
The Polish cavalry, historically, the Wind Hussars, they have a very big tradition of horse racing in Poland.
Okay.
But that's the thing, we're in a little bubble here in Ireland. It was really only when I started my business, I thought I knew everything about horse racing because of my family and the involvement we had. We're only a little bubble.
This is
little
great.
Bubble.
This is all brand new to me too. So tell me more about how big is the market?
Oh, it's huge. Billions. So there's, take somewhere like Japan. The Japanese Racing Association, if you look at the actual turnover and revenues they get, it's billions. I think it's in the tens of billions of dollars that they turn over every year. It's a massive industry. And we just don't think about it in that terms because, you know, it might not be that large in Ireland per se. I know it's a quite a significant percentage of, say, New Zealand's GDP. Is actually directly attributable to the equine industry. So, you know, we've done the math on it.
My eyes are opening now. So there, you've done the maths.
So yeah, 60 million horses, give or take, around the world.
Thoroughbreds.
Oh no, just horses. We're just saying horses.
Now, when you say horses, I mean a horse in a field or...
Equestrian horses, a horse in a field. But from our perspective, we want to track the health of every horse. It's not only we.
There are only, now going the other way. There are only 60,000.
Or 60 million.
60 million, sorry.
60 million.
Well, that's
million.
Okay.
Maybe 60 million.
Maybe it was my mishearing there. Yeah, that makes more sense to me.
Yeah. So 60 million. Mm-hmm. And we're looking to track the health of every horse. So we have horses that aren't racehorses. So we have horses, we have equestrian horses, we have breeding operations that are just for leisure horses, ponies. Our system, we focus on racehorses just because the topical nature of the welfare of the animal, and there's a very big need in that industry to track all these medications and the health of the animals. But we supply our system to we have equine charities who are on the system to track their horses. So 60 million horses, $5 per horse per month, it's something like $3.2 billion is the market. So this is not a small market we're going after. It's a very large market.
3.2 billion. You're beginning to sweat a bit. Something.
Well, that's the goal. That's where. That's
where are you at now?
So we started and launched in 2018 because it took us 2.5 years to negotiate with the various organizations in Ireland to approve of the system to go digital. So we worked for 1.5 years going from the various stakeholders to get the system approved.
And what was their initial reaction? Go away? Or
well, it was just around how the system would be set up, because initially there were debates on how much information should be recorded, how much information should be given to the regulators straight away, if any information should be given to the regulators straight away. And so it was just, there was, because this hadn't been done before, it was trying to figure out exactly how the system would work. So there's just off the top, the Irish Horse Racing Regulatory Board, Irish Department of Agriculture, the Irish Veterinary Council, Veterinary Ireland, the Irish Thoroughbred Association, the Irish Racehorse Trainers Association. There are a lot of organizations, Irish Sport Horse Ireland, sorry. So there are a lot of organizations, and I'm missing some, and I apologize to the ones I've missed, but we had to go and speak to all of them to basically get a system that would be the best system to track the welfare of the horse.
So where is the company now?
So we launched in the middle of 2018, got approved in Ireland. Then we got approved in the United Kingdom by the regulators there. And then
did you have
France.
To go around all to those doors as well?
Oh, yeah. All the
and are we talking about knocking on the doors or Zooms?
Knocking on doors, driving into yards, trying to sell them a whole new idea and getting laughed at quite a bit. Yeah. But then others come in and, as you said, Michael Grassick supported us. You know, the champion Irish trainer Noel Mead supported us. We went to the UK, Nicky Henderson, who hopefully will have a great Cheltenham next week. He's publicly endorsed us. And James Fanshawe, who won his first Breeders' Cup race, World Championship race this past year, he was one of our first supporters. And then over to France, Nicolas Clément, who's a champion trainer in France.
All people in business remember their first supporters, I can tell you. So that's cool. Yeah. And then you are heading for the States?
Well, we were planning a very big launch into the States. We'd been invited to speak at the Association for Racing Commissioners International, which is the one, on the Conference of Equine Welfare and Integrity, which is the one time a year where all of the regulators from across North and South America and the Caribbean come to a conference. And we were saying, wow, we're one of three speakers. What an opportunity. And we had...
How did you get that?
To be honest, I can't even remember. It was probably... Oh, it was a contact we made in Kentucky. And they introduced us to the head of that association, a man called Ed Martin. And he heard about the idea and he said, you need to come and speak to all
Good
my members.
You.
Well, that was supposed to be in April of 2020 in New Orleans. And so we had lined up, Enterprise Ireland here in Ireland. We had lined up investors in America. If we got our approval, even by, you know, six of their 100 plus members, we would be able to deploy. We'd have the beautiful hockey stick. Great. Everything would have been amazing. COVID hits in March. That conference still hasn't happened. And so we had to kind of plan again. So we had secured before COVID a contract with the Kentucky Thoroughbred Association because these regulations were going to come out in Kentucky. They got delayed because of COVID. But one place did introduce them in the United States, and that was California. So we went to California. Well, I shouldn't say we went. I went on Zoom to the head of the Californian state government for horse racing, which is the California Horse Racing Board. And I said, this is our system. This is what we're looking to do. We know you're bringing in these regulations. We can make these changes. This is how we can ensure everyone complies. And he said, great, I'll support you. And so the executive director, a guy called Scott Cheney, came out in public and was the first government official to support us publicly, was a government official in California.
That's nice.
And
that's
so
nice. Like
we
that.
Launched into California. We secured a contract with the Thoroughbred Owners of California. We have a number of trainers up and running over there. So,
and I've promised I'm going to bring you to Connecticut. I'm going to introduce you to the Ireland Connecticut Business Council because I'm sure there are horses
in Connecticut. The United States has tens of millions of horses. It has a massive percentage of the global market. So it really is the market.
US and horses always just reminds me of Bruce Springsteen. He's a huge fan.
Oh, yeah, exactly. And cowboys and, you know, everything. all the Westerns. It's a massively huge market. There's almost more horses in one state, which is Texas, than Ireland, the UK, and France combined. It is mammoth how large the market is.
It's amazing when you're in a business how granular you can learn and dream of these things.
Exactly.
I'm going to ask you two further questions very briefly. I just noted on the website a little thing that you're involved in. Be very brief about it. Lovely idea. Your homeless charity.
Oh, yes. Yeah. So this was, once again, when I was in college, this in Trinity, this was happening. The homelessness crisis is still, it's a huge problem. I think it's the issue facing Dublin, especially. And I wanted to do something. And a friend of mine from school, a guy called Tom Austin, who I went to college with as well, he had gone on a walking tour, as he always did when he traveled. And it was given by someone who'd been affected by homelessness. And he just said the experience was so unique, totally changed his perception. The guide he had was a doctor who'd taken out a loan, but he wasn't Austrian. He was from outside the EU, had health complications, then got sued, couldn't practice medicine and spiraled and became homeless. And he just said it completely shattered his perceptions on homelessness. And he came back to do a similar experience in Dublin and there wasn't one in the middle of homelessness crisis. So he came to me because I had already started Equine Medirec and said, you know, you've started an enterprise, would you help me start this? And I said, of course, without a doubt. So once again, took the route I had with Equine Medirec, went to Launchbox and Tangent. We put the idea together on that program, partnered with the Dublin Simon community and launched our first tour at the beginning of 2019. And it's gone from strength to strength.
I presume they're not happening at the moment, though.
Well, we went virtual. So RTE covered it. We got our guides' iPads, and they'd never had an iPad before. And we had to teach them how to use iPads over the phone, which was a bit of a challenge. And they started giving tours we had people calling in from China. We had someone call in from Yemen. We had people from all over the world, and they were telling their stories. And we're going through virtually all the stops that they would have done and the mixture of history as well as their story. It's just an amazing project to be involved in.
That sounds a pretty impressive one. Final question, hire in a heartbeat. Who would be on Team Equine Medi Record?
Now, I have two, so I hope mind. I have one where if I had a magic wand and I could change the laws of physics, I'd love to have my grandfather join. He was an amazing man who unfortunately passed away when I was relatively young, but he loved his horses, was an amazing businessman, Michael Dargan. And so he had run Aer Lingus for a number of years and then was senior steward of the Irish Turf Club and chairman of Goffs. And I just would have loved to have seen what his advice would have been and what he would have made of what we're doing. And
I think I interviewed your dad, or your granddad, should I say. There's a little bit of history for you. In fact, I'm pretty positive I did.
Yeah.
And your second person would be?
If he's listening, Andrew Lloyd Webber, who is...
Okay. He's a bit of left field.
Well, he's obviously with the amazing, he's creative, innovative, all the amazing musical works he's done, but he also loves his horses. He's highly involved with horses. He runs a Watership farm that he started in 1992. Been highly successful. So
you're just trying to get him to be your brand ambassador.
If you're listening and you want a free trial, we'll set you up.
I don't think he needs free anything. I think the words filthy and rich come together.
But he would be an amazing person just given his creativity. I just love to hear his thoughts and what he thought.
Cool. That's a really interesting business that you have. So continued success and once the COVID goes, I hope to God that you go absolutely worldwide. 60 million horses all on your platform. That'd be nice.
Yeah, that would be the dream.
And that is Pierce Dargan of Equi Medical Record, or Equine Medi Record even. Better get the name right as well. Thanks so much for joining us on That Great Business Show.
Backing great women-led businesses on every show. That Great Business Show.
We're called That Great Business Show because we feature great businesses. If you'd like your great business to star on Ireland's best Business Podcast, please send producer@thatgreatbusinessshow.com an email, or go onto our website and tap the Share Your Story button. Do remember to follow us on our LinkedIn pages, though, because we do check. When I was first reading about our next company, I misread its name. I thought I saw Armpit. Great name for a company, actually. But what it actually is AI Mappit, a very early stage company that uses artificial intelligence, that's the AI bit of the name, to detect stationary objects like street furniture, postboxes, poles, street lamps, traffic lights, etc. And that is a good thing, because before my next guest at the TCD tangent-based AI Mappit, its co-founder Julie Connolly found telegraph poles out in the Irish Sea. Or so they appeared that way on maps anyway. Julie, you are so welcome to That Great Business Show, Maps and Poles in the Irish Sea.
Yes,
explain.
Thank you, Conal.
Explain.
Back in 2016, AIR came to the ADAPT Research Centre, which is hosted in Trinity College, with the problem of how to gather inventory of their poles. So just to put a scale on that, AIR have 2 million poles.
Whoa.
Distributed over 90,000 kilometres of road in the country. And so a snapshot of inventory is a very difficult thing to have. The test cycle is a year long.
What's a test cycle now?
So every year they go through the whole 2 million poles to make sure they're safe and secure and working and have all their pole furniture in place.
Somebody hasn't
and so
nicked
on.
Them.
Somebody hasn't nicked them, or they haven't fallen over, or... So it takes a year to get around all of them manually. Obviously, that's an expensive process and time consuming and prone to error, as we discovered when we plotted the current database, we'll say, of their poles. And we found that some of them were in the Irish Sea and some were in the Channel and some were in the Atlantic. And there was a couple in Copenhagen.
Okay.
So
well,
that's down to, badly calibrated equipment, basically. This is an historical network.
And how might that affect the world, having air telegraph poles in Copenhagen?
Well, represented on a map, I suppose. What we found, we've completed 2 case studies now for telecoms operators with this technology. And in some cases, poles aren't represented in databases at all. So everything across the board from network design and planning to operations and maintenance are affected by misinformation, if you like. So good data means good decisions. And if you're sending engineers to site for repairs or maintenance, depending on how loaded they are in terms of their equipment and their training, you're talking about 500 euros a day. So sending an engineer to the wrong place to do a job on a pole that doesn't exist anymore, or is it a different location down the road somewhere, is a waste of time and money for the company. So there's efficiencies across the board to be had by having accurate location information for all your network assets.
And the AI in Not Armpit, AI Mappit.
We may need to do a rebrand at some stage.
What are you using? I really like this.
So, the artificial intelligence part is actually what's called convolutional neural networks.
Of course. We were always talking about that.
So we train neural networks to detect the shape of the pole in an image. So the imagery that we're using is basically street level imagery as opposed to satellite or aerial. Because if you look down from above at a telegraph pole, you'll basically see one pixel at 30 centimetre resolution. So the top of a pole, if it's 30 centimetres wide, will be represented by one pixel in satellite imagery. But if you look at it from the street level, you're looking straight at the pole and you can create
like
a mask and it looks like a pole and you can see it in the imagery. So basically, our system can be trained to detect anything that's visible to the human eye in an image. And once we've trained it with the features, so the system basically is trained with, they say, data is king in AI, annotated data is queen. So once you've trained the system by saying this is a pole, in millions of or hundreds of images, the system will pick up the features that represent a pole. And once it's trained to detect the pole and segment it from its background, then it can run ad nauseum, ad infinitum, to find poles in thousands and thousands of images. So to do the whole country using the system once it's trained would take probably a couple of weeks as opposed to a year, which is what would take manually.
Because was it 200 kilometres an hour?
That's right, 200 kilometres an hour with one GPU. So you could parallelise that and do it a lot quicker, but that's the kind of bare metal.
And whose knowledge are you using when you are running around with at 200 kilometres an hour? Whose Are you using Google Maps or are you
We're currently, using Google Street View, but we've been approached by a company in Greece, a survey and engineering company, who capture their own imagery. So they're prepared to go out and drive the motorways of Greece and we would then train a system to detect the assets on the road for them.
This is neat now. So this is, and I was looking at your team, they're from all over the world. Let me remind myself, Russian?
Yes.
French?
Yeah.
Who else have you got?
So Rosanne is the principal investigator. She's from Brittany originally, but she's in Ireland, I think, almost 20 years now. And her PhD is actually probably the genesis of the research in this area was about road maintenance. So using traditional image processing techniques to look at safety of road signage and road markings. Then we have Vladimir, who's Russian mathematician.
A lot of brains in this place.
There's a lot of brains, yeah. A Russian mathematician and remote sensing expert. So he came to us in 2017, actually joined the AIR project 2017 when we were doing the prototype there. And then we applied to Enterprise Ireland in 2019 for commercialization funding. So we had done a market feasibility. There seemed to be a bit of interest in other market sectors. And we applied for the Comm Fund and we were, successful in funding.
And was this your first foray into enterprise for yourself?
Yes. And actually...
You know you're mad. It's everybody who does this. We all say it. You're going down a journey that, you'll never get back from this. It's like you're going to spiral into being an entrepreneur and there's no going back.
Well, actually, the funding that we got from Enterprise Ireland has allowed us to bring on board two new resources to the team. One of them, Motaz, he's Egyptian by, hails from Cairo originally, and he's had his own startup back in when he was doing his PhD in Malaysia. Had a little navigational tool that he started a company with. So he has his entrepreneur spirit already. And we also have now Mate, one of our own in-house PhD students, just graduated recently. He's our new deep learning expert. So we're using all of that knowledge as well as, the imagery we're using at the moment is Google Street View, but it could be any imagery collected privately.
Because this is your clever software.
The software processes the imagery and extracts information about it.
But so, that's yours, is that? Yes. I'm trying to figure it out.
Yes.
So
we could process any imagery from anywhere.
Okay.
Our pipeline ingests the imagery, processes it, finds the poles, assigns them an accurate GPS location and spits that out.
What I'm always asking is there must be somebody doing something similar. For example, the CIA, or call them whatever you want, MI5, spies, or those kind of people, they must have mapped the entire world so that when they're taking over the world, that they know not to go up that street, but to go up that street. Is that work all not already done?
That level of road mapping has been done. Well, Ordnance Survey Ireland would be our experts here in Ireland, OSUK, do it.
Yeah.
So the 2D road layout exists, but what we're mapping are objects on the road. And that hasn't been done by the CIA, at least not for telegraph poles that we know of. There is a company called Mapillary. It was a startup in Sweden about 7 or 8 years ago. And they would be, I'd say they're around the 8 billion mark in terms of collecting imagery. And they do have a bit of
image. When you say 8 billion, they have collected 8 billion images.
Yeah, it's a crowdsourced platform, actually. It's an open source. So they want people to upload their own imagery if they're out driving around in their car or on their bike and they have a camera collecting imagery, they'll host it on their platform for free and let you use it. They license the imagery then.
This is lovely. It's my perfect segue, because really what I'm going to ask you now is for everybody listening, they're all going to say, well, what would I use that for? What would you use? Now, forget about your air comms or whomsoever like that, who have poles.
Yeah.
What other commercial application can you just think of straight off for that?
Well, the one that's come up recently is smart city planning. So the 5G rollout is one of the big things that smart cities are starting to take notice of. And what they're trying to do is consolidate all the potential infrastructure they have that could host 5G picocells. So the small base stations that 5G is going to be.
Because one day we'll be walking down the street and there'll be lots of these tiny little things stuck in a wall and you'll never be out of the signal.
Exactly. So,
but I've been waiting for that, not just the 5G, for 4G, 3G or any other G. I've been waiting for that for a long time.
Yeah.
It hasn't happened yet.
Yeah. So, well, it's being rolled out in the UK.
Well, 5G is lashing over there. Yeah.
Yeah, but yeah. They're basically putting it at the bigger base stations. But the goal of 5G really is to be the Wi-Fi on the move, you know, so that you don't have to get to your destination of choice and ask them for the Wi-Fi code. You'll have 5G coverage, which would be, you know, high bandwidth to your mobile, basically. And in order to allow that, they're going to need basically host infrastructure. So lampposts, telegraph poles, bus stations, wherever power is available to deliver power to the Pico cell. And at the moment, the asset information in a city is siloed across multiple databases. So you've got your lamppost database and you've got your Big Belly Bin database and you've got your, you know. So Glasgow have actually published a register of their infrastructure at the moment, and other cities around the world are looking to do the same thing.
And that's interesting. Say, go back to Glasgow, because we had Tommy Griffith on the show here, and he makes the best bins in the world, and they're sold around the States. Mm-hmm. He's got into the US Army, for example. Incredible business out of Mayo. If he were to virtually go around Glasgow, he could say to them, you know what, you haven't got enough bins up here, or I could put bins back up there, that kind of thing?
Correct, yeah, yeah. So we could, you know, the way our system might be useful in that application would be to detect where the current bins are and show them on a map. And, you know, then an operator could look and say, okay, we have a black spot here with none, or, you know.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. Yeah. What other, and these are the commercial, oh, you see what I'm doing here? I was trying to think of how to make my millions. What other commercial applications that you just think of, God, you know, this is so obvious to you, but not to me?
So the other market sector that we've been approached by, still in the telecom space, was cable network operators who want to just digitize all their assets. They need to know where all their junction boxes and amplifiers and splitters and so on are.
I can understand that all right, yeah.
Yeah, and then another one we've been recently approached by, the survey and engineering company in Greece. We've also been approached by the road management office here from Donegal, because road traffic signs, you know, we actually drive past them all the time without really taking any notice of them.
I'm going to make you the life honorary general of Team GBS if you ever sort out, what do you call them, road signs in this country. Mm. It is nuts. Mm. And I know it's a kind of a national joke, but it is a joke, in the wrong kind of a joke.
Yeah, that's where our system could help, by digitizing the records of them. Just making, you know, because everything is going digital now. The pandemic has just accelerated the digitization of everything, because we have to be able to access things remotely and online. So once things are in a system, then you can apply due diligence to where they are and how they're being replaced and how they're being monitored and managed and so on. So that's how our system will help.
And this is a business, because you're going to sell all of this.
Hopefully, yeah. Yeah. So
we have become filthy rich.
Well, that's the goal, Conal. Yeah. That would be the
Mecca. A lot of people come in here with that goal. We're still waiting for the call back.
yeah. So, well, we have pre-seed funding from Enterprise Ireland, as I said, from the Commercialisation Fund.
And what has Tangent done for you? But we better give Tangent a shout out.
Yeah. So, well, while we're in our pre-seed phase, we've been testing the technical performance of the system in other markets. And one of the things we now need to do is come out of our research cocoon, is look
That's
at...
That's why you're here.
Exactly, yes.
It's the first time you've come out to play, I believe.
Yes, and in a very long time. we need a commercial model to underpin the technology. So, you know, what we've been learning as part of our accelerator programs and our startup entrepreneurship training is that a system needs to be technically feasible, desirable to a customer, and viable as a business. So we need to, you know, investigate all three of those things at the same time to see at the end of this, we have about, I guess, a year's runway left on our comm fund. Have we got a viable business? You know, so we
and
might
what's
have...
What's it looking like?
Well, we're starting to get some feedback from a prototype customer in the UK, the largest network operator. They're very, very convinced by the technical performance of the system, and they're currently mulling over the commercial model. So,
does that mean that they're trying to hustle you on price?
No, not yet. I think they're still trying to make a business case internally. You know, they have other technologies that they're evaluating at the moment as well.
But yours is best.
Ours is best. Yeah, it's quite niche. Obviously, what it does doesn't replace the manual engineer going to site and, you know, knocking on wood to make sure it's not hollow. you know, but we do have a layer of technology readiness that could, you know, facilitate some advancement of those kind of accuracies that they need in their database. So in the UK, if you thought 2 million was a lot, they have 5.5 million poles distributed over 400,000 kilometres of road in Britain. So it's a much bigger problem. And again, multiple databases that don't all match up. So there's a lot to be said. The accuracy that we delivered for them was actually better than the ground truth they captured themselves. So
that's fantastic.
That was a real, real encouragement. Yeah.
When did you decide yourself that you wanted to count telegraph poles?
I'm not sure I ever made a decision to want to count them. But I have to say there is some satisfaction in knowing that you've delivered something.
That there are 2 million in Ireland and 5.5 million in the UK.
Well, we haven't counted them all for them, but that's what they're telling us. But in our case studies, we found that, consistently now in a couple of exchange areas, there's at least 10% of poles not represented in their database.
So 10%? That's a lot.
Mm. Yeah, I don't think they even really realised it themselves until it happened a second time. In fact, the second time it was more like 17%. So, yeah.
Wow. There might be an audit to see, I thought we bought a million poles and we've only
It's grown organically since whatever the 1880s or the first telegraph pole was, you know, put up in the country. And over time, different methods, different people, you know, capturing and recording on the back of their engineer's notebook or whatever, and then transcribing physically into a database when you miss out a digit on a location. So a lot of records are actually text descriptions. You know, they'll say there's a pole at the bottom of the road opposite the tennis club. You know, not quite that bad now, but, you know, it has moved along from that to what now needs to be an accurate GPS location.
Well, wait till I tell you now, out there in podcast land, there is a person, a real entrepreneur, thinking, good God, now if I use that for X, he or she needs to contact you. So where is she going? Where is she or he going to find you?
Yeah, julie@aimapit.com would get me.
So if they make it look like armpit, but it's aimapit.com.
Yeah.
It's a great story.
Thank you.
And when you get the huge big contracts, do come back and tell us all about it, please, because you are now officially Team GPS. And one other thing. I forgot. Who would you hire in a heartbeat?
Yes. I did think about this and...
And you almost let me forget.
I couldn't let you... I'd be back up to tell you, actually. it would be probably my first boss in the market unit here in Ericsson, down the road in Clonskilly, Páirc O'Donoghue. He's a telecoms engineer by nature, but he was the market unit for transmission systems when I moved to Ericsson in 1998. And as I say, an engineer by trade, but a businessman by nature and very always looking for the next thing, you know, visionary, very good, strategic, and but also man of huge integrity, just a joy to work for.
That's a nice thing to say too about Páirc O'Donoghue.
Yes.
Of Ericsson. Is he still with Ericsson?
He's not. No, he's moved on a couple of times actually since, but he's currently with a company called Surecom, who are in the telecom space. They're a network solutions.
We will stick a LinkedIn link to him.
Do.
And see whether he will, I'd say he'd love to hear it. That's a nice recommendation. Because that, unfortunately, Julie, thank you very much for joining us on the Great Business Show, Julie Connolly. That's it from the Chris Mizzen Show, episode 25, recorded as we do every week at the Dublin South FM podcast studios. Today's supersonic sound man was Keith Starrs, Starrs by name and nature. Thank you, Keith. Peter Rice will sprinkle his magic dust later, making us Ireland's best sounding podcast by far. Our super scout, without a doubt, this week is Oina Phelan at Tangent in TCD, who lined up not one but two of our great businesses. Avril McHugh suggested Laura Ward. And I have been chatting with James Murphy for so long, waiting for his patent to land, I've forgotten who made the intro. But it might have been Bobby Byrne down at Ringers. But do look up that Ian Madigan video on YouTube and share the pain. You're laughing, Judy. Have you looked at it?
I did watch it.
You did watch it?
I did.
It's so sore.
Why would you do that to yourself?
For business. Please send us your best recommendations for Ireland's best businesses that we can feature on the show, particularly women-led businesses. And remember to check out the Ireland Connecticut Business Council website for our weekly events. And finally, a word from our sponsor, De Facto Shaving Oil. All you need to know, whether you're a man or a woman, is that using De Facto is good for the planet and great for your skin. buy it today at defactoshave.com. From me, Conal O'Moran, on That Great Business Show. We will talk again next week. Slán tamall.